Welcome back, John Papa, Dan Wallin again. We'll talk about this lab, lab 10, I believe, is using the NVVM pattern in Silverlight. And the idea in this lab, and the lab walks you through step by step, as we were just talking, about all the different things you have to do with Model VV model to get started out of the box. And then a couple flavors and variants of NVVM that we use to help, we suggest to make things a little bit more scalable, a little bit more easier to maintain.
Exactly.
So in this video, let's not walk through the entire lab, but instead what we wanted to do is explain kind of the reasoning behind some of the things that we're doing in the lab, what Model VV model is, NVVM is, how we bind the model to the view, what some of the features are, how to bind a command, and also talk about this service agent that's mentioned in the lab.
That's right.
So with that, I'll let Dan kick it off.
Well, let's talk first about it's really important to understand the pattern and why we want to use the pattern, because you know, there's a lot of people out there that throw out patterns, but yes, for me, and I think probably for you as well, unless I have a good reason to use it, it's just a waste of my time.
What's the point? What am I getting out of
it? Exactly. What am I getting out of it? So first off, the big key things to know about NVVM are obviously that you get better testing capabilities if you're doing that. My number one driver, though, is testing is super important, and I think that's great. But especially if you're doing production maintenance or support, things like that, sometimes maintainability or ease of maintenance is a real big driving factor. And then the third big one is we get a lot of code reuse between some things we're going to talk about, like the service agent and service proxy, whatever you want to call it.
Anytime you type something twice, you got to think, hey, maybe I could abstract this.
Yeah. You know, it's really no different. I kind of liken it to a database. You know, if you see a database that has the same fields in the tables all over the place, you
normalize it.
You normalize it.
Right.
So it's the same thing. So NVVM really is about, we just simply want to abstract out our code, make it reusable. Some people try to make it so hard to understand, and it's very simple. If you know how to make a class and move your code into the class, you know how to do NVVM. So, but we'll talk about the pattern.
And this is valuable because if you, let's think about what you don't do if you don't do NVVM. So if you have a project, you don't do NVVM, by default, when you first get into Silverlight, you create everything in your XAML and you put everything in your code behind. And then if you have a web service, you call from your code behind. Any business logic for the client would go in your code behind. Everything's in one place.
That's right.
You create another screen, now you've got all that same logic, which you have to copy and paste, and then you've got a maintainability issue.
Yeah.
It's really hard to test that stuff as well. But for me, again, it's more the maintainability and the scalability. You start breaking things out in other classes, it makes it a lot easier. You end up with less code.
Yeah.
It's easier to consume.
The way I always explain it is, in a real-world app we're doing, we have jobs in almost every screen because it's a job-oriented app. And if we use the standard way, which is put it in the code behind, now I'm having to duplicate that logic across all my views, my screens. And obviously that's not efficient, and I don't want to type it anyway, you know?
So, we have the view. The view, for us, I think, we're thinking of the view as the presentation in the XAML and the code behind.
That's right.
So what goes in the code behind in NVVM?
So I'm not one of those that says no code in the code behind, because I absolutely believe there should be some code. A good example would be I might want to pop up a child window. I might want to pop up a message box. I might want to perform an animation, a transformation.
Any UI-based animations. So the way I look at it the other way is, what don't you put in the QV model? What don't you put in the code behind? If you see logic, if you see an if-then or a switch case or something like that, any kind of logic or you have to think, that probably shouldn't go in the code behind.
Unless it's view-specific logic.
Right.
You know, I want to play this animation or this animation. Mm-hmm. You know, that type of thing. So yeah, that'd be our view. That's our screens. And what we're going to do is, instead of putting all the code, and we'll pull up an example of kind of before, after, so you can see the difference here. And that's what you'll walk through in the lab exercise. But what we're going to do is ultimately move all the code out of the code behind, like you said. We're going to move that into a class, which officially we call a view model. It literally is a model. It contains the entity data for your view. Thus
in
the name.
In some ways, it's kind of like a controller for the view.
Yeah.
But the reason it's a view model is because we actually use data binding to bind and hook the two together, as opposed to a controller where you're actually interacting with it.
Like with MVC,
right.
Exactly. But it is really, it kind of controls things. It drives and runs them. So we're going to have all the stuff we would want to bind to, customers, collections, you know, maybe states, zip codes, whatever you're binding to.
Any objects, yeah.
Any objects we're going to put in the view model instead of in here. Mm-hmm. That way we can take that view model, we can hook it up into the view, which we're going to do. And that's what you'll do in the lab exercise. And then we'll bind those two together. And that'll keep a clean separation. And we're even going to take it a little step further than this. And in the lab exercise, the first one, you'll go in and you'll create what we're going to call a service agent or a service that right. gets the data. That's going to ultimately, though, the view model and this other thing we'll talk about will be responsible for getting the data from the server. And we're going to say that the model in this case, I like to just kind of simplify it and say sort of your server-side code. Some mm-hmm. people say it's just your entities. That's fine. I'm okay with that. But I'm just going to lump it into your service, your code, anything you got to get. The view model knows how to talk to that, get the data, or knows how to go through a service that gets the data.
Right. Okay. So your view is your data, is your screen.
Right.
Your model is the data that's going to end up on the screen in some way, shape, or form.
Yep.
And the view model is the one that kind of binds those two together. It's that glue.
It's the glue.
Okay.
Middleman. Yep.
I gotcha.
So let's jump in Visual Studio. Kind of have a before and after. So this particular file here, which I'm going to pull up, and we're going to do side by side. So let's go ahead and move that to the left. And this is kind of the normal way people write their code behinds. You'll notice I have all the code in here to call the web service and get some data and bind it and yep. all that fun stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that per se. But again, like in this example down here, right in this section, I'm actually getting customers, and there may be multiple views that need customers. So,
right. So why repeat those same three lines of code? And then the completed handler, so it's really several lines of code in multiple code behinds.
Exactly. So there's your callback. So let's open up what we're going to ultimately get, and that's going to be this guy right here. So let me drag it up, and we'll move it over to the right, and we'll come back to this guy. Okay, so there's kind of the difference. So
on the left, we have the code behind we started with.
Yep.
Before the lab, and after the lab, the code behind's on the right.
This is what it's going to look like when you're done. Now, again, it's not inferring, as we just said, that you shouldn't put any code. We're not really doing any animations or transformations or mm-hmm. stuff like that here. But it does provide a very kind of stark contrast.
So let's look at the names of the methods that are over here. Can we pull down the drop-down list real quick?
Sure.
On the old code behind, or the before picture, and let's look at some of those methods we have. We've got a loaded method, a get customers completed, a delete button click. All that stuff is logic. What happens when we delete? What happens when we update? What happens when we load? So those things are going to move over to not this code behind, but
the view model.
Right.
Yeah, combined with another thing we'll talk about. So that's kind of the first part is understanding why do we want the pattern. Mm-hmm. And again, it's all about maintenance. It's all about testability and maintenance and ease of use. You know, we want to make our life easier.
Right.
It's not a hard thing once you understand that literally we're just going to move that code into a separate class. And that's
right.
what we're talking about. So, all right, let me go ahead and we'll shut those guys down. And what we're going to do now is, in exercise one, you're going to go through and create what I call a service agent. I know mm-hmm. What do you call yours?
I think it's called data services.
Data services, yeah. Same thing. It's basically a class that's responsible for the data. So we talked about you have your view model, and then your model. The view model, we said, has the actual data that's going to bind ultimately to our XAML.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I could put all the code in my view model to call the service. But even then, what if I have multiple view models that get customers?
You might have multiple screens, multiple view models that need to go and get information about customers, which is
exactly.
very likely.
Very likely.
So why not abstract that one step further?
Exactly. So what we're going to do in the first lab exercise, when you walk through it, you're going to go in and you're going to create this guy here called, here's the type. It's a customer's service agent. And has an interface. I'll talk about why. You don't have to do that, but it makes it more loosely coupled.
It does.
And so it only has two operations, two methods, get customers and save customer. Now you'll notice in the first one that there's nothing really there except for one parameter, which we're going to call the callback. So the whole goal in life of this customer service agent is we want to get the data and give it back to the view model.
Sure.
The view model really shouldn't know how to get the data, because that way you can switch out, instead of returning real data, maybe at design time, I want to return some design time data
right.
based on what mode we're in. So there's a lot we could do there. The second one, you'll notice, we're going to save the customer, so we allow a customer to be passed in. And then again, this class will be responsible for calling the service, and then when it comes back, the view model will be called back, and we'll see how this ties in with the view model in just a minute.
So because these are asynchronous, you need the callback just so we can know what happened.
Just so we know what happened and when it happened, exactly. So here's the methods. You'll see they're pretty simple. We're just going to use a standard proxy here, WCF mm-hmm. proxy, and we're going to hook that up to the callback that the view model will pass in.
Right.
And just as we showed.
And they just have to match the types that the service is expecting.
That's right. And so same thing here. So you can see, not a whole lot of fanciness, but now if I have, say, 5 view models that need to call this get customers, because maybe we have a combo box on all 5 screens
right.
or something, then we can actually reuse this particular code, and it makes it a heck of a lot easier.
So we showed this. Could we show this side by side real quick with the old code behind we had?
Sure.
So if we show this real quickly.
Oops. Yeah, if I can drag it up, that is.
Drag it north, I think.
There we go. Let's pin that to
so
the right.
So we use the Windows right key. Anybody's wondering what he's doing. He's using the Windows right key and the Windows left key, so we can do side by side. If you have two monitors, much easier.
Yes.
So here we've got on the left, we can see down here the completed and the async for the loaded. But now instead we're just pulling that code out over into a service class.
That's right. That's all we're doing. Just move that into a separate class.
Make it reuse.
Make it reusable. That's the
much
whole
easier.
Goal in life.
Now, do one other thing for me. The code behind, how many lines of code do we have in here? If we go to the bottom.
About 72.
Not a whole lot, but you can see what you're doing is you're pulling out pieces of that code and functionality into classes that are kind of their responsibility in life. This guy's responsibility in life, the customer service agent, is to provide access to saving and getting of customers.
Exactly. And really, that's all MVVM is about in a nutshell, is it's not that you're going to write more code. You might write a little more when we talk about properties.
But overall, yeah.
Overall, but not really a ton more. It's more about you are going to have more classes.
You'll have more classes, but they'll be shorter. You won't have any 1,000-line
That's right.
classes.
Yeah, in fact, the view model will be more in line with this type size minus this code here.
The real bang for the buck comes in, too. As you mentioned, you start creating other screens, you realize the code I have to write for each screen becomes minimal because a lot of the logic's been already duplicated in other classes.
Right, exactly. Once you get going, it's kind of rolling downhill.
It's very much so.
So definitely you'll find that. So the next thing we're going to talk about, so exercise one, you'll go through and they're going to go in and create the service agent.
Mm-hmm.
And so once that's all created, we now have a way to call this WCF service through a proxy object.
And you could still call that from the code behind.
You could. You can even reuse it there if you want.
Right. But again.
But what we're going to demonstrate is when we were talking about this diagram here with the view model, and then the model. So the service agent isn't shown here, but it would kind of sit right over there.
Mm-hmm.
Just sits, you know, in between those two.
The view model would call him and use his features to fill or save models.
That's right. And so going back to here, what we're going to talk about now is so how this is our view. That's our XAML.
Mm-hmm.
How do we create, first off, a view model, and then later we'll see how to bind that into this XAML here.
Right.
So I'm going to jump over to a class that you're going to create in the exercise, and we're not going to type all this out because we don't want to bore people, but you'll do this in the lab exercise, and the first thing you'll notice is I have something called a view model base.
Right.
And a view model base is really there because you're going to get really, really tired of implementing this particular interface, I notify property changed.
Yep.
Across multiple view models.
And we talked about that in the data binding lab that we had earlier in the day.
Yep, that's right. So a couple things, I'm gonna come back to this one, but here's the implementation of the interface. So we have our event that we're gonna have to implement. And this is used, of course, it's the number one player in Silverlight for data binding, like you just mentioned. So we're gonna have a way to raise it. And so we're gonna check in here, is anyone listening? If they are listening to that event, then we're going to go ahead and raise the event, and you'll notice we simply pass the name of the property.
So then all the view model classes that implement this would just say on property changed, name of my property.
Exactly.
And we would call that in the setter.
Right. And we'll actually, now that we've seen this, I'm going to talk about the is design time real quick, but we'll actually see the properties like you're talking about in just a sec here.
So what is this is design time?
So the big thing with view models, you're going to see in a moment that there's many ways to do view models. We're going to kind of, in this particular exercise, we kind of do the starter approach to get you started and not overcomplicate things. And so you need to know if you're in design time or not, because if your view model calls a service and you're in design time, you will quickly learn you'll get an error.
Right.
And the first time you ever see it, you're just like, what do I do?
So, and what we mean by that is inside of Cider or Blend,
yep.
Cider being Visual Studio,
yep.
Sorry, the designer. If you try to show your elements in your screen and you're calling a WCS service, Visual Studio tries to call that service and says, hey, I can't do that in design mode.
That's right.
So you need to know if you're in design mode or not.
You and your Microsoft buzzwords, you know.
Yes.
Key product names. So is design time here.
Mm-hmm.
Is simply a simple property you can see. This is going to leverage a built-in feature of system component model. That's the namespace. You can see it right up top.
Yep.
And it's the easiest way to know, am I in Visual Studio Designer or am I in Blend? Because if you are, you might want to fake the data. to right. do return design data instead of actually trying to, you don't want to call the service, I can tell you that, because it won't work. So we'll see how that's used in just a sec. So that's kind of our base. Now, in a real-world app, this is also where I might put some security info so that every view model gets the same security access.
Anything every view model needs. And you could even go further. You could add properties here, or you could inherit from this and have another view model base class which has all the application-specific things that you want in your view model.
Yeah. And so it's a good place to put all your core stuff that you don't want to type over and over and over.
Right.
So the next thing you'll do in the second exercise is you'll come in and create this class called Main Page View Model. Now, real quick, you'll notice our view is called mainpage.xaml. Mm-hmm. You'll notice that, and it's not by accident, that the view model is Main Page View Model.
Right.
You don't have to do that, but this whole convention thing is really nice. It makes it easy, especially if you're on a team with, you know, more than one.
It makes it a lot easier to know this view is that view model. And it doesn't have to be a one-to-one for view to view model. And there are a couple exceptions where we can talk about it later, but basically, for the most part, you start out with a one-to-one with a view to view model.
Usually, that's pretty much the case. And there, like you said, though, there are exceptions to the rule. So you'll first come into the exercise, you're going to inherit from view model base. That's the one we just looked at that implements iNotify property changed. And then from there, it's going to have you come in and you're going to write some constructors, which we'll come back to. But the first one of the first things you'll do is you're going to add some properties. And as you said, John, in the property set block, you know, we need to raise that event to notify that, hey, this binding's changed.
Right.
Well, that was defined, as we showed earlier, back in our view model base, right there. And that way we don't have to, you know, write that code over and over and over. Now the other thing you'll do in this exercise, and I'd highly recommend people just do what the exercise gives you and use it in real life, is there's a code snippets folder. And depending on if you're doing Visual Basic or C#, you'll see a different snippet. But the lab exercise will walk you through how to put that snippet in the proper spot, so that you can do something like this in the lab. So you'll come in and you'll say MVVM.
So let's say we had a property called first name.
Yep. So we'd say MVVM IMPC. And by the way, these are snippets from the MVVM Lite toolkit,
right?
Which is really, really nice. So we'll come in and we'll say tab and then tab. And if it's first name, we might do first name. And I'm done.
And it types in everything in the way you want it. First it checks the value change, then it sets the value, if it did, and then it raises the event for you.
And so, yeah, all that business is, you know, I don't want to really type that.
No, that's a lot of code.
You might have a lot of properties in one given view model, and nobody wants to put all that in. So we'll actually undo this guy. And that's kind of what you'll do in the exercise, though. So I'd highly recommend get good at the code snippets, because you'll save yourself a tremendous amount of time.
Right. Copy and paste is a little dangerous in that, because there's several places you have to change the name.
Yep. So you'll go in and you'll see we have a customers. This is going to bind to a combo box. Let me, now that we're at this stage. Oh, wrong page. I actually want to open up main page view model. All right. Let's switch to design view here. All right, so you'll notice we have our combo box, and then we're going to have some text boxes once you select a customer. In fact, this, for those that did the Windows Forms or ASP.NET Lab, it's the same UI. We're just now kind of upgrading it to MVVM.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what we're going to bind to. Now, this is kind of key because we have our customers. That's going to bind to that property, which I just showed. And then based on what's selected here, we can then bind to that customer in these text boxes.
Right.
But how do you know when the selection's changed? Most people would say, well, I got to write an event handler for selection changed, but yet if I right-click view code here, and this is the final version of it, there is no event handler.
Right, so how do you handle an event if you're not using the code behind
it? So let's look at that. It's an excellent question. So you notice I have customers. Let's go ahead and shrink that guy down. Current customer is the key. So what we're going to do is the combo box or any, you know, data grid, list box, always have kind of the selected item
You
can get to. So what we're going to do is bind that to this current customer property. So we don't need an event. We're just going to say, hey, when the combo box changes, let's go ahead and automatically, through a two-way binding, automatically have that bind to current customer. And that will take care of what we're going to do there. And that's going to also enable some things we'll get to in a moment. So that's a really nice trick if you're doing MVVM that a lot of people think you have to handle the events, you know, data grids, combo boxes. This is what, in real life, you'll
because there's really two things we want to do when somebody selects an item out of a combo box. We want to first pass, invoke some kind of an event saying you must do something now.
Yep.
And in that code, you're going to need to know what did they select.
Right.
There's two pieces. So you're solving with this right now, what did they select? The view model is just
right
going
here.
To know through bindings. You're going to bind that, I assume, to the selected item?
Yep.
Okay.
Of the combo box.
And
perfect.
Now we have to know how to hook the event up as well.
Yeah, which we'll do in a little bit here. So the final property you'll write is a status message, and the status message is going to be used when they save or update. We'll update that, which
feedback
will update
the
user interface. So kind of a simple way to pass data back and forth.
Sure.
All right, other than that, here are the kind of methods we're going to call. So here's our get customers, but notice it calls into service agent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where did that guy come from? We'll get to that. We'll wrap up with the constructors up top, but that's where it came from. And that's that one we just looked at earlier. It's what you'll write in exercise one.
So we abstracted all those methods to the WCF service.
Right, right. And then here's our update. Here's our delete. These all reference a save customer, which actually does the work. Here's where we update the status message of, hey, it either works, success, or unable to complete operation.
Right.
So the last thing to show in this, before we get to exercise three stuff, is some constructor magic going on here. So we're going to bind this object into our XAML. And in doing that, we need to know which service agent to use, because as we talked about, you might have a design time service agent.
Mm-hmm.
You might have the real one. It depends. So in this example, we don't have a design time one. We're just going to do one. But we need to know a couple things, one of which is which service agent do we use? Because you'll notice this second constructor allows us to pass in anything that implements that interface.
We just want something that has a get customers and save customers.
That's all. That's what we're after. And so the reason we're doing this here, and in a real life app, I actually inject this dynamically, but
right.
to kind of avoid having to go through that part of it in the lab, we're going to say this is the type I want to pass into here, and then we're going to check if we're not in design time, then we want to go ahead and use that guy and
mm-hmm.
call the service. Otherwise, don't do anything. So there's a lot we could do here. Now, this is kind of the simple way of doing it. Some other things we could do is I've seen you do, John, but we're going to make sure we don't air out in essence.
Right, right. And we can abstract this and take it a lot further. And at the end of the video, we'll mention some places you can go after going through all this.
Yeah. So this is a good way to start, though. So we're going to call get customers, and then I'm going to come back to wire commands in just a bit because that'll be exercise three that we're going to
okay.
talk through. So all right. So the next thing we're going to do is now that we have our view model base, which implements iNotify property change, kind of gets that busy work out of the way
mm-hmm.
one time and for all. Now we're going to go back and we need to associate this view model with this view. Now there's many ways to do this. I'm going to show one way that I happen to like for reasons of design time data and other things we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what you'll do in the lab. So we're going to go into the XAML. And the first thing we need to do is we need to reference that view model namespace.
Right. We have done a lot of view model work. We haven't hooked the view model to the view yet.
Yeah, it doesn't know about it. So now we're going to staple it together or glue it. So you'll notice the view models is the folder. So there's going to be a view models namespace. So let's come on in and we'll just call this view models. Not real creative, but it works. And we should see Silverlight customer viewer view models right there. So that's going to put in the, I must have picked the wrong one, because let's try that again. And what that's going to do is give us the reference to the appropriate namespace that we want to, access and get to. So let me go ahead and select that. It was right at the bottom.
I think when it's at the bottom, you're double-clicking and scrolling.
It's scrolled. Third time's a charm. Or fourth time. All
fourth
right.
time. Let's see here.
Let's see here. I might just type it.
So what we're trying to do is we're trying to reference the view model namespace. So
right there. That's the guy I actually want. Hey,
there
all
he
right.
Is.
Fourth time's the charm. So what this is doing is we need the namespace. Now, in a real life app, I actually like to create a whole separate project
mm-hmm.
for my view models. And so we would also reference the assembly. But for this one, we're good. So next thing we're going to do is use that. So you'll notice we have a user control for our root. So we're going to say user control dot resources.
The resource is really just a section that allows you to associate other objects, in this case, like a view model, with the control, the user control.
That's right. That's exactly what it does. So we'll come down and we're going to use that view model's namespace. Notice that I now have access to my view models, which we don't want the base, but we do want the
right.
main page view model.
And in fact, we can't create the base because it's abstract anyway.
Don't want to be doing that. So we'll go ahead and put that in, and then we just give it a key.
So this is going to, basically this is the same thing as saying var x equals new main page view model.
Yep.
But in XAML.
All we're doing is just, we're going to give our variable a name of view model, and ultimately that's going to call into the default constructor.
Mm-hmm.
And that default constructor will then call into this constructor, which does all the work.
Right, right.
So that allows us, if we're testing, we can pass in different service agents, mocking, all that fun stuff.
The advantage of doing this in XAML versus in the code behind is now you have this key and this resource available throughout all the XAML, so you get all the design time.
Get some visual data binding, exactly. So let's come down. The final thing I need to do here is we're going to come down on our grid, and we're going to say data context equals. And now what I want to do is I want to do a binding, but I have to say what's the source of the binding. Well, the source is going to be the key.
Because we created the view model, but we haven't told it to use it for the data context yet.
That's right. So we're going to say static resource, and we're going to give it the key. Call it view model. And now we're wired up. So we define this actually, as you just mentioned, creates the instance of the view model.
Mm-hmm.
This then binds it declaratively into the data context. Now all these children have access to those three properties that we just looked at earlier, current customer, customers, and status message.
Right.
So if we switch, the bindings have already been hooked up, but in the exercise you'll visually do that. But if we switch back to design time mode now, let's go to the combo box, and I always do kind of a courtesy build here just to make sure everything's in order.
Yeah, it's never a bad idea. So if we've done this right, what we should have is in the properties windows, we should be able to see under the data bindings the view model's properties.
So let's come on over, and for instance, let's go down to item source.
And because we see a little yellow eraser, or whatever that is over there, that means we have data binding going on.
So we click on that guy. It's binding to the data context, and notice that all the properties now of my view model now appear. And so they're all available. In this case, we want to bind the item source to customers. And then if we scroll down, here's the selected item.
Which again has the yellow eraser.
And we want to bind that to the view model, which is, again, our source up here. And we want to bind it to current customer. Now it's cool because I don't have to write any code other than that to handle the event. There's no selection changed event I have to worry about.
Right, no selection change. You don't have to push and pull data in and out of your screen either. It's all very
it's just,
nice.
We're leveraging two-way bindings, mm-hmm. which is a really cool feature of Silverlight. Likewise, the text boxes here, they're also going to bind.
Now, you didn't have a first name property in the view model, but because that's binding to the current customer, as you said, you're going to get
look
what?
At that. So now, the data context is still the same, but I'm going to bind to current customer, and now because it knows the type to bind to, look what I get. I get all the properties of the customer object.
And that's your model. Binds. The customer is the model.
That is the model that was passed from the server side, mm-hmm. ultimately. And that process follows for all these text boxes. So it's really, once you get it going, I actually think it's a lot easier because if we were to do all this as we did with the first screen we showed to start the video,
mm-hmm.
we get no visual binding. And so I would have to go in and actually, you know, type all the bindings that you see here on the text boxes, which is all this stuff.
Right.
Over to here.
We get that question a lot too about the dot syntax. Yes, the dot syntax is valid inside of a binding as well.
Yeah, it works very well, and there's our two ways.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really clean. This is why we kind of said there is a little bit of setup work, but once you get the ball rolling, it's all downhill.
If you have other screens that use customers, you can reuse this model object, you can reuse the service. It's very nice.
Yep. So the final thing, which is exercise three, now that we've, let's kind of review, I guess. We've created a service agent to get the data from the service and call it back to the view model. We created our view model base and our main page view model, which are these two guys up here. We've done some data binding to our appropriate properties on the view model.
We've connected the view model to the view.
And we corrected, connected and corrected, since I couldn't click the dang thing. Now the final thing we're going to do is normally when you have a UI like this, you're kind of used to just double click on the buttons and that'll make the event handler.
Mm-hmm.
But again, this is the final version you'll do in the lab and you'll notice no event handlers. So what's going on here? Well, we're going to use a concept called commanding, which really means, hey, I have an event that happens in the UI. When it fires, I would actually like to bypass the code behind and go straight to the view model.
Right.
And that's what's going on here. And so I'm not going to double click on these. Instead, in Silverlight 4, we have support for an interface called iCommand, which the lab will kind of talk about. And iCommand allows us to hook a button up to, in essence, a method, but through a middleman. You can't bind to methods, but you can bind to properties which can route our data or delegate it.
So our goal is to take this button, and when I click this button, have some code, I assume, in the view model that's going to execute, and then perhaps go off and run the save customer.
That's right. That's exactly what's going to happen. So the view model already has the code in here, but you'll do this in the lab exercise. You'll notice that in our constructor, we call this wire commands. Wire commands takes two properties, which are very, very simple, right here, that you're going to add in exercise 3. Mm-hmm. And we have this type called relay command. Now, there's different types of commands. There's delegate command, a relay command, and
they implement the iCommand interface.
That's all they do.
Which is how the button can talk to them.
Right. Now, this particular one comes from the MVVM Lite toolkit. It's
which really I also like.
Easy to use. But, you know, if you're using Prism or another framework for MVVM,
you can use the delegate command. That's fine.
So you'll notice there's not much to it. It doesn't even say what to do. In fact, this is useless on its own. We have some properties here, but they don't do anything.
Right.
So the whole goal of a relay command is when a button is clicked, or any commanding type object is clicked in the UI, we want to route that to a method. So notice that we create a new relay command, and because this is a delegate type command, we're going to say, hey, here's the method to call.
So that's how it knows when I click on that button, I'm going to probably bind that button to this command, this update customer command, and then it's going to know, hey, this is the guy you have to actually run once somebody clicks it.
Right, and that's, we looked at these earlier, but they're just right down here in the view model.
That's kind of like your event handler code that you would probably put in.
This is exactly what the event handler would normally do. So notice I just, you know, I call save customer, and then it goes on its merry way.
So this would be the event handler, equating it to the button click, and then the line above it is where you actually set the event handler.
That's right. This is the glue between it all right here.
Right.
So we have two of them. So we have two buttons, two commands. And again, all a command property does, is just glues the button to a method.
And something key I run into once in a while, and I notice I like the style you're doing here, is you want to make sure the command is public. Otherwise, the view is not going to be able to see that data binding. It needs any method or property that you're going to expose to the view has to be public.
That's right.
If it's going to do data binding. And in this case, you can make the setter private because you're not going to set it.
Not going to use it.
But you're going to get it.
Yep. So the final thing to do, now that we've, when this second constructor gets called, so, you know, when the view loads, it's going to invoke this constructor. Mm-hmm. That calls this one. If we're not in design time, all this stuff runs, which will wire up those commands, those commanding properties to the methods. So the final thing to do in this exercise is you'll come in and we can just right-click on our update button, go to properties, and go find the command property. And in the command property, we can apply data binding.
Right.
Our data context is automatically detected, so we're good to go. And because this is an update, we'll call update customer command. That's our property, and we're done at that point. That's all we want to bind to.
Then repeat the same process for the delete.
Same thing for the delete. So let's go ahead and we'll run that. We'll go to the command, apply it, and there's delete.
Could you flip to the XAML real quick just to show it's the same binding syntax as you're doing a text block or a text box?
Yep, so probably put it on the end here.
So there's our buttons, and you can see the binding is the path of what's the name of the command.
And that's all it's doing, because our data context already is the view model. Mm-hmm. And so we're just going to take that property on the view model, and we already know that points to a method, ultimately. So what's going to happen is this command, when it gets invoked, will automatically allow us to route that data directly to the view model. And that's why, if I view code here, that's why we have no button clicks in our code behind. And it's great, especially if you're doing testability. So that's kind of the final piece of exercise 3. So that kind of gives you the whole gamut of MVVM. And really, if we go back to what we showed initially, all we were doing was we took all that code out of the code behind, we moved that on over into the view model.
Made it more reusable, more maintainable.
And that's it. And that's really the goal of MVVM.
And it allows your designer or yourself, your developer, going into the designer view to hook things up through clicking, through the properties, and you can do this through Blend or Visual Studio.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's what you'll do in the exercise, and it provides a really good introduction. Now, there's other things you mentioned with design time data that you can do, and there's even more you can do with how you hook this up.
Yeah, when you go to the next step, there's a couple things we'll have, and the Firestarter will talk more about this during the session, which is recorded. And also, I've got a video at PDC, which is recorded. You can check out at MicrosoftPDC.com, which goes to a little more advanced stuff with MVVM and how you get design time data, error control overlays. You can actually talk from the view model back to the view. So it handles more what do you do after you get from the starting point. But this is a really important first step to understand with MVVM.
Yep, this will get you started. And so this app, when it runs, it won't actually do anything different than what we've done before. In the Windows Forms at ASP.NET Lab, it looks identical. You know, everything kind of loads up the same way. But ultimately, the app itself now, there's a few things here with commands. You'll notice that we haven't selected a customer yet. And so if we come in and select a customer, notice those buttons now light up.
Right.
Okay, and all that's going on there is, and this is something you'll also kind of handle in the lab, to wrap up, is all that's going on is when those property change, when we have a customer. So let's go into the current customer real quick. You'll notice that we're changing the isEnabled of that command property to true.
Right.
Because now we know we have a customer. Otherwise, why would you click the button? Mm-hmm. You don't even have anything to do.
Exactly.
So that's another nice feature of commanding with MVVM. You'd, normally, if you do this in code behind, you'd have to write all that code. Here, it's kind of a one-liner. And as the property changes, we now automatically can enable or disable the button. So that's the last piece of that exercise.
All wires up nicely, and again, we started with all the code behind code. It wasn't very reusable, wasn't very scalable, wasn't very maintainable. And now we've spread everything out so we can have very reusable. So we could rip out another screen if we want to. We could reuse the models, reuse the service agents. Very easy pattern to follow.
Yep. That's a great way to go.
Well, I thank you all for watching this video. This is Lab 10, and the next lab please stick around for is Lab 11.